everyone. Welcome to our last episode of Sneedcast Industry Update for 2023, the series that keeps you updated with our ever-changing industry. For those of you that have been watching this series for a while now, you know how this goes. But for those of you that are new, welcome. We'll be covering the latest in manufacturing, packaging, coding, sustainability, and much more. I'm your host, Alexa, and today we'll be discussing topics ranging from Tyson opening a new food production facility, to the brewing industry dealing with aluminum tariffs, to floating farms and tackling food security, and finally, combating waste through newly implemented state food recycling programs. Congratulations to Tyson Foods for opening their new food production facility in Danville, Virginia. The new $300 million fully cooked food production facility business is one of the company's most automated plants to date, marking the deployment of innovation pilots and prototypes at scale. The 325,000 square foot facility represents a significant investment in the local community. It will produce approximately 4 million pounds of premium quality fully cooked poultry products weekly to meet the increasing demand for iconic Tyson brand products in retail and food service. The new facility has created nearly 400 new jobs for the southeastern Virginia region. And according to Donnie King, the president and CEO of Tyson Foods, Danville represents a significant commitment to the region. This plan is also a significant step toward our ongoing goal of operational excellence by investing in innovative technology and automation. This facility delivers on our commitment to ensuring best-in-class service for our customers and accelerating our long-term growth. The Danville facility is one of the company's most highly anticipated plants, featuring high-speed automated case packing lines and robotic case palletizing units. This technology helps maximize operational efficiency and increase overall team member safety. Some new equipment includes metal detection, X-ray, and vision grading to ensure consumers receive high-quality products. The new facility is also Tyson's first at-scale integration of wearable armband devices to improve worker health, safety, and productivity. The award-winning solutions for every frontline team member integrate technology featuring sensors that relay environmental data to safety managers to better identify risk exposure. According to Wes Morris, the group president of poultry at Tyson Foods, the Danville plant incorporates the latest technology that brings real-time intelligence to our processes, products, and workplace experience for team members. The growth doesn't stop there. The company has partnered with Danville Community College to create a maintenance technology training program to support the growing field of industrial maintenance with competitive pay and many opportunities throughout the company. Growth and safety, we love to hear it. So once again, congratulations to Tyson's Food for their latest venture. So moving on, we'll be talking about how the brewing industry has been combating aluminum tariffs. It seems that inflation has been a common theme throughout our segment this year, and new research reveals that aluminum tariffs continue to drive up costs for American businesses and consumers. Since Section 232, tariffs on aluminum were imposed almost 6 years ago, the American beverage industry has paid more than $2.175 billion in unnecessary fees. Research conducted by Harbor Aluminum on behalf of the Beer Institute found that the U.S. beverage industry paid more than $2.175 billion in Section 232 tariffs on 10.295 million metric tons of aluminum since its implementation. Of the amounts that were paid in tariffs, only 6% or $135 million went to the U.S. Treasury. Harbor Aluminum estimates that U.S. rolling mills, primarily U.S. smelters and Canadian smelters, received $2.04 billion, or 94% of the tariffs. Brian Crawford, the president and CEO of the Beer Institute, stated that brewers and countless hardworking Americans in industries that depend on aluminum have been taking it on the chin for far too long. The reality is that Section 232 tariffs hurt far more than they help, and they hurt consumers who are already feeling the effects of inflation at the register. Crawford then calls on the Biden administration to get these harmful tariffs lifted and deliver much-needed relief to the 2.4 million Americans whose livelihoods are based on the brewing industry and other industries that rely heavily on aluminum. More than 6,600 breweries are in the United States, supporting nearly 2.4 million American jobs and contributing more than $409 billion to the U.S. economy. Brewers and beverage producers of all sizes pay a higher price for aluminum because rolling mills and smelters include tariffs in their prices, regardless of whether the metal is subject to Section 232 tariffs. Imported primary aluminum and canned sheet are critical to the U.S. beer industry since more than 74% of all beer produced in the U.S. is packaged in aluminum cans and bottles. In 2020, brewers bought more than 41 billion aluminum cans and bottles, making aluminum the single most significant input cost in American beer manufacturing. Lastly, the Beer Institute recently launched MidwestPremiumExposed.org to educate consumers and lawmakers about the Midwest Premium, better known as MWP. The MWP is an obscure pricing system that allows aluminum producers to charge end users a tariff on non-tariffed metal. By shining a light on the MWP and bringing transparency to the market, competition will return and deliver relief for brewers and countless other industries hurt by inflated aluminum prices. Let's cross our fingers that we'll catch a break soon and that the upcoming year will bring some relief to the soaring inflation we face this year. It seems like floating farms are making a comeback, and no, surprisingly, it's not in Mexico this time, but rather in the Netherlands. These floating farms have been up and running since 2019 and are considered to be the world's first floating farms, which isn't entirely factual, seeing as though efforts to put agriculture on or in the water are as old as the Aztecs, who built their artificial islets to grow food. However, it's an idea that's getting new attention as a way of tackling both food security and the challenges of climate change. While floating farms like the ones found in the Netherlands are quite intricate, that doesn't always have to be the case. Take the floating farms of India and Bangladesh as an example. Non-government organizations are reviving the traditional practice of creating floating rafts that can keep seedlings above monsoon floodwaters, prone to drowning crops. India isn't the only body reviving these floating farms. The South Asian Forum for Environment has made some technological improvements to their climate-resilient floating farms. Their bamboo rafts are built larger and heavier to better withstand storms. Then plastic coverings and shade nets are used to protect fragile plants. And lastly, solar-powered pumps collect rainwater to irrigate the seedlings. Not only has the South Asian Forum for Environment made some improvements to its floating farms, but the organization has partnered with local research institutes to better supply farmers with the best possible climate-resilient seeds and pass on knowledge about pest control. Communications Director Amarita Chatterjee said, "The rafts are not a very conventional type of farming, and it takes patience to get used to them. But in a few years, they've more than doubled 500, the number of floating farms operating in different villages. With Asia facing an increasing amount of erratic monsoons, the rafts have helped with food security. They were also helpful when the Indian state of West Bengal was hit with a 1-2 punch of a cyclone followed by COVID-19 in 2020. Professor Craig Jenkins, an academic professor of sociology at Ohio State University, said that the floating farms will clearly be scalable in the coming decades in Southeast Asia, but educating about the technology may be a hurdle to its adoption in some places. Jake Boswell, an associate professor of landscape architecture at Ohio State University, said, "The success of floating farms will vary by region. While much of the world's population lives in coastal areas, only a subset of those communities farm in flood or storm-prone areas." Daniel Petrovic, a PhD candidate at the University of Amsterdam, who has studied scaling of several climate interventions, including those in the agriculture sector, said, "Factors like what is the local diet, what do people eat, is this feeding into that, what kind of stakeholders benefit from it, is it that it helps alleviate food poverty in a city, or is it just some kind of gimmick from, let's say, a corporation just looking for a return on investment? Whatever the case may be, it's essential to create a sustainable farming system that is climate adaptive. With that being said, we're sure to see even more floating farms like the ones in the Netherlands and Asia. We're down to our last story in the segment. This time, we're talking about donating food. Sean Rafferty, manager for ShopRite of Elmsford Greenberg, reflects on the significant shift in the grocery business. Previously, unsold items were discarded, but now businesses participate in a statewide program to donate edible food and recycle remaining scraps. Rafferty, with 40 years of industry experience, highlights the positive impact of evolving programs, helping combat food insecurities. New York, among other states, addresses concerns about food waste occupying landfill space and contributing to global warming. The methane released by dumped meat, vegetables, and dairy in landfills is a major environmental issue. Globally, 1/3 of food is wasted, while the U.S. faces an even higher rate of 40%. The financial and environmental costs are substantial, with $218 billion spent annually on growing and producing wasted food. Emily Broadlieb, Harvard University law professor, underscores the shocking impact of food waste causing 8% to 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. She highlights that 20% of U.S. water is used to grow food that is eventually discarded, emphasizing the direct transfer of water resources to landfills. In 2015, the U.S. set a goal to reduce food waste by 50% by 2030. This prompted state-led initiatives and smaller nonprofit efforts. 10 states and the District of Columbia have passed legislation to reduce, compost, or donate waste. All 50 states protect donors from legal liabilities related to food donations. California and Vermont innovate with programs converting food waste into compost or energy. Connecticut mandates food waste recycling for businesses, and Maryland incentivizes farmers with tax credits for food donations. States like Rhode Island and Massachusetts join New York in implementing systems to facilitate food donations, increasing contributions to food banks, and reducing landfill-bound waste. New York's program, in its second year, has redistributed 5 million pounds of food, equivalent to 4 million meals, through Feeding New York State. The initiative supports 10 regional food banks with plans to double the impact next year. Diverse contributors, including colleges, prisons, amusement parks, and sporting events, are required to participate in food donation. Westchester County employs 8 refrigerated trucks for perishable food pickups. Feeding Westchester, operating since 2014, witnesses increased participation since the donations law enforcement last year. The collected food benefits nearly 300 programs and partners throughout the county, including a mobile food pantry and the Carver Center, aiding families and children. Danielle Vasquez, food donations coordinator for Feeding Westchester, highlights the importance of supplementing families during times of high living costs in Westchester County. Testimonials like that of Betsy Quiroa underscores the significance of food donations, especially for those relying on Social Security and facing increased costs due to the pandemic. Despite New York's success, advocates expressed concerns about meeting the 2030 goal and called for a coordinated national effort. Emily Broadlieb emphasizes the lack of a clear roadmap and the need for a more substantial USDA presence. Catherine Bender, University of Delaware assistant professor, raises concerns that donation programs might shift the burden from businesses to nonprofits, potentially straining food distribution capacities. The grocery industry's evolution toward food donation programs driven by state initiatives is addressing both environmental concerns and food insecurity. The global and U.S. food waste scenario, coupled with state-driven innovations, underscores the importance of coordinated efforts. New York's successful program showcases the potential impact, but challenges remain in meeting the ambitious 2030 goal, emphasizing the need for a comprehensive national strategy to combat food waste. Our last episode of SneedPak Industry Update this year is sponsored by our latest innovations, SneedPak capping machines. Revolutionize your bottling process by eliminating manual challenges. Our machines officially sort, place, and tighten caps, boosting productivity. With a sealing capacity of 20 to 60 bottles per minute, of course this is model dependent, they outperform traditional methods, ensuring error-free bottling. Versatile and adaptable, SneedPak capping machines accommodate various bottle types. Experience the future of bottling with customizable features, height adjustment, and high-quality components. Don't forget to take advantage of our financing deal for your chance to save up to $595. It's only valid until the end of the year, so if there were a time to keep packaging simple, it'd be now. Like always, guys, thank you to everyone who tuned in to Industry Update this year, and we'll see you next year. Stay tuned for our next episode of SneedCast Industry Update, and make sure to like, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell down below to stay up to date with all of our great content. Also, let us know what topics you'd like to see us talk about here on the show. We look forward to hearing from you all. Bye, guys.